to the Divided Kingdom. Mr. and Mrs. America, that's Lou Caverly and I, Elizabeth Cuppy Caverly, are here with news and warnings tonight, July 11th, 2019. We wish to thank wonderful WWCR for its outreach worldwide, globally, spreading the message of our risen Savior, Jesus Christ. And you can hear us, our program, The Divided Kingdom, on Thursday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern Time at WWCR.com. Click on transmitter number 3 or on the shortwave frequency 4.840 megahertz. Again, that's at 8 p.m. Eastern Time Thursdays. You can hear the program also on Saturday mornings, 8 a.m. Eastern Time on 7.490 megahertz. That's 7490. You can also hear our program at the Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net, and that's at 5 p.m. Mondays Eastern Time, repeating at 11 p.m. And now we have some exciting news that we are also going to be on the K-Star Radio Network. And if you'd like to go to their website, first of all, that's www.kstar, and that's all written as though it were one word, K and the word star together, kstartalkradio.com. Again, I'll repeat that. That's kstartalkradio.com. And we will be on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, and there is a new feature. You, of course, will have to pay for this if you decide to do this, but we're so happy that the head of the network has given us a telephone number that you could use to listen. And if you'd like to jot this down, here is the number for unlimited listening. Of course, you, again, must pay your own bill. It's 1-605-562-5330. And again, we will repeat that number for the kstartalkradio.com Sundays at 10 a.m. listening time for the Divided Kingdom. 1-605-562-5330. And again, we are hearing from some of you listeners in this rather hot summer. We don't know whether our ice age theory is going to hold up or not, but we will see. There have been some anomalies, and we'll see what the fall and winter bring. But we are very grateful for your letters and the help you are giving us, even some postage stamps. You just don't know how essentially, pragmatically useful they are to Lou and me. And now we are going to just get into the program. Ross Perot, the man who would be president, who heard the great sucking sound as NAFTA propelled American industry out of the country and whose family the New World Order deep state threatened, also the man who tried to bring back the MIAs all to no avail, is dead at age 89. His patriot template successor, Donald Trump, gave a magnificent July 4th speech as America's military aircraft flew and swooped overhead the Lincoln Memorial. Significant history, including the war on the Barbary Pirates and the Civil War, came to life in Trump's speech. Thrilling words for every Christian listening came from the wonderful Battle Hymn of the Republic, sung in the background. In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea. As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free. But a week later, an unexpected flood overran the intact White House basement. Perhaps, as we alluded to before, the Prophecy Club speaker's vision of the House of America, resplendent in pomp and pageantry on its exterior, is not so glorious underneath the brightly painted exterior. Are the inner supports rotten and trembling? June and July in America have been busy months for another kind of flood, a deluge of change. July 5th, Paul Joseph Watson's website showed that this flood is not just limited to America, but it is a heavy stream just north of us. Canadian broadcaster CBC was accused of sexualizing children after it promoted a new documentary about, quote, drag kids. The clip, which was tweeted out by the CBC Kids account, shows numerous minors talking about their drag alter egos, while one of them, a 12-year-old, performs what some complained were sexually suggestive dance moves. What's it like to be a kid drag queen? CBC Kids News spoke with the four stars of CBC's new Drag Kids documentary to find out what drag is and why they do it, stated the tweet. The backlash was pretty swift. The parents of these kids and the producers of this documentary should be in prison for child abuse, commented Mark Dice. Nice, CBC Kids, real nice. Are we training kids to be strippers and pole dancers now? Arrest those parents and defund CBC. That was another response. Why is the CBC exploiting children and sexualizing them? Is this solely to push their agenda? Ask another. Paul Joseph Watson commented, as we have previously highlighted, 12-year-old drag queen kid Desmond is amazing, has been relentlessly promoted by mainstream networks in America. His mother recently told an Australian TV show, "I don't understand what the controversy is," after being asked about Desmond performing at a gay club while patrons threw money at him. As we reported last week, an admitted pedophile and convicted child porn peddler also wrote a blog post in which he described 12-year-old Desmond as hot. And you listeners recall that on a previous program, I talked about a little boy. There was a video clip of him on Laura Ingraham's Fox News program, and this little boy was named Keenan, and he was from Austin, and he was dressed like Carol Channing, and he was no more than about 7 or 8 years old, and he was flailing his little arms around, and I said it just broke my heart to Lou, because it looked like he was just about to go into a piteous wail. No, these are puppets. These are mind control victims by whomever gets them to do these things that are far from appropriate for children. It's just a terrible time we're living in, and we just know that we must speak out about these things. Lou, it's really getting bad, isn't it?
Yes, we have a collection of photographs here from an article entitled Philly Pride Photos. 31.
And we must comment that a listener alerted us to this, because there's a situation going on in their local school system in which the Supreme Court would not hear the case. And, of course, this goes back to that bathroom issue, that type of deal. We'll get into that more probably next week. But we were grateful to learn of this parade. We did not know that it has quite a historical precedent. It's been there, I think, Lou, what, 31 years?
That's exactly
31
right.
31 years, while the sleeping churches yawned and never said a word. The Rip Van Winkle churches, when they do awake, they will be moaning and whining and perhaps sobbing when they see what has happened to their own children, their own grandchildren. But tell us, Lou.
Once again, this is from the Philadelphia Inquirer, I believe. It's entitled Philly Pride Photos, 31 Moments of Proud Celebration from the 2019 Rainbow Parade. The subtitle, Proud Celebrations, were on display at the 31st Annual Philly Pride Parade. This was by Kristen J. Bethel and Dania Henninger. And the date was June 9th, 2019, and it was later updated on June 13th. A rainbow of proud performers and partiers flooded the streets of Philadelphia on Sunday as the largest ever Philly Pride Parade and Festival made its way from the gig. And notice this, it's not neighborhood, it's gayborhood, intentionally changing the word.
So clever, Lou.
Yep, to Penn's Landing. Now in its 31st year, the celebration was themed Stonewall 50, in remembrance of the groundbreaking 1969 Stonewall riots that spurred changes in LGBTQ acceptance. A special on the 50th anniversary will air June 30th on 6 ABC, that would be the television station in Philadelphia, followed by a recap of Philly's 2019 parade, marking the first time the event has been televised. A half century ago, Philadelphia was at the forefront of the gay rights movement. Organizers began hosting annual reminders, that's in quotes, annual reminders, outside Independence Mall 4 years before Stonewall. And the city remains on the front lines today. Sunday's parade brought out officials from around the region, including Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf, Philly Mayor Jim Kenney, and Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanion, plus State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta, the first openly gay person of color elected to the Pennsylvania legislature, and former Governor Ed Rendell, who were both grand marshals this year. In contrast to the negative role it played at Stonewall 50 years ago, the law enforcement had a large supportive presence on Sunday. Philly police spent weeks decorating a special LGBTQ1 rainbow cop car. And there's a special memorial contingent for Sheriff Deputy Dante Austin, the department's LGBTQ liaison, who died of apparent suicide just 2 days prior. Also in attendance on Sunday was everyone's favorite mascot, the one and only Gritty. Actor Jason Segel, who's in town filming an AMC anthology series, showed his pride while making sports fans happy by bringing a Sixers cap to the festivities. There were multiple wedding proposals throughout the event. As the parade passed Independence Mall, there was an engagement that got an additional surprise, an offer from the mayor to perform the marriage ceremony. Here are some of the captions under some of the photos in this article. Jamie Goldman tosses a flag with the Flaggett's color guard. Lily St. Queer, who says the world, quote, has become more accepting, unquote. Quorn Quap, that's the name, Quorn Quap 4, celebrates Philly Pride. I think that means he's a little guy 4 years old, he or she. The parade took over Market Street in Old City. Sky Rose, S-K-Y-E, Rose, played guitar to help drown out an anti-gay protest at Penn's Landing. High kicks are even higher when you're afloat on a float. This is a gentleman holding an open fan and kicking his legs up. Rainbow Harleys, motorcycles, were definitely a thing. Our Lung, with free mom hugs, offered friendly embraces. The Philadelphia Gay Men's Chorus danced in the parade. Maria G. and Jeremiah R. High Schools enjoyed the feeling of acceptance at the parade. Maria, who is bi, came to the parade with her boyfriend, Jeremiah. She said being queer in her Pennsylvania high school can be difficult, and that being a Latino presents cultural challenges. Pride Day gave her an opportunity to experience something different, she said. I feel accepted.
And we must interject here. A little later, we'll be telling you the statistics of the people in America turning away from church, turning away from religion. You see, there isn't much hope. We also wonder about that gay pride planning. I guess he was planning things, who committed suicide. You see, there's a hopelessness. There's a despair. But when people know Jesus Christ as a personal friend, this is far different from some kind of religion. He is a living being. Jesus Christ, yesterday, today, and forever. Isn't that right, Lou? He is our friend.
That's right.
Yesterday, yes. He showed us in six different ways that he was with us and he was blessing us. One of those things was a beautiful cardinal that went across the road in front of our car. Another one was the night before, the Eroica playing. By the way, some people have asked what our theme song is. It is the Eroica. It definitely is Beethoven's Third Symphony, and so we had that happen, an encouragement to stay on the radio. We had these church chimes. That was really wonderful. In a little town where we were stopped to do something important, there were two or three other things that we knew were not accidental. The Lord was honing in to show us what the purpose was of our life, our lives, really. And he was showing us how he was going to help us. Isn't that right?
Exactly, yes.
So you see, that poor Latino girl, if only she had a real pastor of a real church who would help her belong, she didn't need to leave her boyfriend and go out with women and say now that she's bi. She probably doesn't have any idea whether she's, quote, bi or not. You know, what did you know at about age 16, Lou?
Not very much.
And I didn't either. But it is a troubling time when you're a teenager. And where are the good Christians who are supposed to be guiding these young people? We don't know. But now, what else happened there in Philadelphia? And, you know, again, we think about all of these. I think later you mentioned this, the kings of the world. I mean, there they are. The governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, the former governor, Ed Rendell. How can we be blessed with this going on? How can we be blessed politically? But isn't there a little more there yet on these 31 sites of this Gay Pride Festival?
Yes, a couple of other headlines. And there were, if you go to that site, you can see the pictures to go with it. Philadelphia Police Department's official LGBTQ1 vehicle made a splash. They show a picture of that. And then there's...
Now, you know, we had a hard-hitting program years ago, I think, when Joe Biden's son, Beau, was still alive, and he was there in Delaware. That was Al Cuppet documenting the foreign police cars that are in America. And they're still here. Some of them are here. We have seen some over the past few years. They're not labeled like other cars. They're not authentically American police cars. But, you know, the enemy is within the gates. Who would have ever thought we'd actually have an American police car? Tell us again what it is, the official what?
It's the official LGBTQ1. I guess the one is simply to designate number one automobile of that type. So that's the Philadelphia Police Department's official gay vehicle made a splash at the parade. And then one other headline with a photo. It says, Kenzie M. of Middletown, Delaware, covered herself with a flag and not much else. Now, there were others that I saw on the Internet, but I simply didn't have time to get them all. But that's a good sampling of them.
Yes, it gives us a lot to think about. And then we move on as we think about the harm done to our youth. Fox News reported July 8th, billionaire mogul and registered sex offender Jeffrey Epstein was to appear in a New York federal court that day. Prosecutors allege he preyed on underage girls who were 14 and younger. This all comes after a previous arrest and a plea deal that then ended a secret plea deal that ended a federal investigation against him. And that deal was overseen by former Miami U.S. Attorney General Alexander Acosta, now Trump's labor secretary. The White House announced in February it was going to be scrutinizing this deal and this involvement of Acosta. The Miami Herald published a series of reports bringing the light of day to this clandestine plea deal. As a result, perhaps, Florida District Judge Kenneth Mara ruled that Epstein's victims should, under federal law, have been consulted about the deal. Under consideration now is whether Judge Mara will invalidate the deal. Epstein's guilty plea involved only state crimes, so there is no double jeopardy in the new arrest, which is under federal law. Epstein was arrested July 6th after his private jet coming from France landed. Fox News reported in 2016 their acquisition of court documents showing that former President Bill Clinton took at least 26 trips flying aboard Epstein's private jet, the Lolita Express, to Epstein's pleasure island. Reports leaked that Clinton apparently ditched his Secret Service protection on some of these trips. We recall, too, that either Time Magazine or Newsweek, when Newsweek was still available in print, reported on Prince Andrew's alleged involvement with an underage person in Epstein's underage empire. Fox News has reported that there are allegations that court documents have been filed by Bradley Edwards, the lawyer who represented several Epstein accusers. Allegedly, these court documents state Trump banned Epstein from his Mar-a-Lago estate because of Epstein's alleged assault on an underage girl at the club. That claim has yet to be confirmed by Mar-a-Lago. The secret deal, now challenged in Florida federal court, allowed Epstein, 66, to plead guilty to lesser charges of soliciting and procuring a person under 18 for prostitution. These were state, not federal charges. He averted a possible life sentence and instead only got 13 months in jail, plus having to make money settlements with his victims and register as a sex offender. We'll be very interested in seeing how this case proceeds. Let's move on in this time we're living in that's getting very challenging, Lou.
Yes, it is. It's a worldwide flood with the kings of the world unfurling rainbow flags. Here we have from Friday Church News Notes, wayoflife.org, June 14th, 2019, Jerusalem's Gay Pride Parade. Jerusalem's annual Gay Pride Parade was held on June 6th with an estimated 10,000 to 15,000 in attendance. To counter ultra-Orthodox protests, the police had a massive presence, posting officers every 10 to 20 meters along the parade route and stationing helicopters and drones overhead. Israel's first homosexual justice minister, Amir Ohana, appointed hours earlier by Benjamin Netanyahu, joined the parade. The city government refused Chief Rabbi Ara Stern's request to remove rainbow flags, instead ordering the removal of a protest poster that read, "Father and mother equals family, the courage to be normal." No wonder the Bible calls Jerusalem Sodom in Revelation 11:8. Meanwhile, over in Israel's second-largest city, Tel Aviv's 21st annual Pride Parade is scheduled for today, June 14th, in the midst of a month-long homosexual festival that is one of the biggest in the world.
I must interject, Lou. Do you note that when that began in Tel Aviv, Philadelphia had already been, quote, celebrating for 10 years?
Oh, yes, more than that, even.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. American Babylon, that's really where we are.
I think so. And it says that parade in Tel Aviv is in the midst of a month-long homosexual festival, one of the biggest in the world. Some 200,000 are expected to march in the parade. Tel Aviv's Hilton Beach was recently voted, quote, one of the best gay beaches in the world, unquote. And that this reference is from the Jerusalem Post, June 5th, 2019. And the city's LGBTQ community center is funded by the government, with workers receiving city salaries. Also, from Friday Church News Notes, again June 14th, 2019, there is a new blog titled In the Closet of the Vatican, and a book documenting rampant homosexuality in the Vatican. The following is excerpted from, quote, bombshell book alleges, and the reference is CBS News, February the 15th, 2019. A gay French writer has lifted the lid on what he calls one of the world's largest gay communities, the Vatican, estimating that most of its prelates are homosexually inclined and attributing much of the current crisis in the Catholic Church to an internal struggle. In the explosive book entitled In the Closet of the Vatican, author Frederick Martel describes a gay subculture at the Vatican and calls out the hypocrisy of Catholic bishops and cardinals who in public denounce homosexuality but in private lead double lives. Aside from the subject matter, the book is astonishing for the access Martel had to the inner sanctum of the Holy See. Martel writes that he spent 4 years researching it in 30 countries, including weeks at a time living inside the Vatican walls. He says the doors were opened by a key Vatican gatekeeper and friend of Pope Francis, who was the subject of the Pontiff's famous remark about gay priests, quote, who am I to judge, unquote. Martel says he conducted nearly 1,500 in-person interviews with 41 cardinals, 52 bishops among seniors, and 45 Vatican and foreign ambassadors, many of whom are quoted at length and in on-the-record interviews that he says were recorded. Martel said he also was assisted by 80 researchers, translators, fixers, and local journalists, as well as a team of 15 lawyers. The 555-page book is being published simultaneously in 8 languages in 20 countries, many bearing the title Sodom.
Again, what is the name of that book and the author, Lou?
The book is entitled, now let me see, In the Closet of the Vatican by Frederick Martel, M-A-R-T-E-L, In the Closet of the Vatican.
Very, very interesting.
Yes.
We can know that the spirit of Satan is really actively at work. We know that there was a priest whom Dr. Stan Monteith interviewed quite a bit, and he talked about, I think, the smoke of Satan curling into the Vatican. I can't remember his name right now. Can you remember who it is?
No, I can't.
But he gave a lot of revelations that were very interesting. But this spirit is alive and well. You know, what did it say in the Bible that Satan likes to run back and forth, you know, trying to cause trouble, trying to ruin people everywhere he can?
Yes.
Something like that. He runs up and down, isn't that it?
I think so. That might be in the book of Job.
Yeah, I think it is. And so we had an extremely interesting picture here of the Satanic Temple. And this was in the Washington Times, Thursday, June 20th, 2019. And under this picture, it said, the Satanic Temple unveils its statue of Baphomet, a winged goat creature, at a rally for the First Amendment in Little Rock, Arkansas, Thursday, August 16, 2018. The Satanic Temple wants to install the statue on Capitol grounds as a symbol. And then they move to what's happening right now in Soldotna, Alaska. And this headline is, Government Meeting Opens with Hail Satan Prayer. A Satanic Temple member who won the right to open Tuesday's invocation that started the meeting of the Kenai Peninsula Borough also spurred a protest outside the Southern Alaska Borough's administration building that drew 40 people, the Peninsula Clarion newspaper reported. Protesters held signs saying, reject Satan and his works, and know Jesus and his love. During her invocation, Satanic Temple member Iris Fontana said, quote, that which will not bend must break, and that which can be destroyed by truth should never be spared as demise. It is done. Hail Satan, Kenai radio station KSRM reported. She was among the plaintiffs in the lawsuit litigated by the ACLU of Alaska against the borough after it approved a 2016 policy saying that people who wanted to give the invocations at the government body's meetings had to belong to official organizations with an established presence on the Kenai Peninsula, which lies 75 miles south of Anchorage. Other plaintiffs who had been denied permission to give the invocations included an atheist and a Jewish woman. The Alaska Supreme Court last October ruled that the borough policy was unconstitutional, and the borough government changed it in November to allow anyone to offer invocations regardless of religion. Assembly members Norm Blakely and Paul Fisher and borough mayor Charlie Pierce were among those who left the assembly chambers along with some audience members. Assembly members are not required to attend the invocation to participate in meetings. You see there still are some normal, red-blooded American men who understand that this country will never prosper under this foreign spirit of Lucifer, of Satan, of the devil, this snake-like, serpent-like culture of death that is writhing around the little children. It's like a big anaconda that's wrapping the children, even as little Keenan tries to be Carol Channing and he's flailing his arms against this horrible serpent of evil. And this article says, God will be pleased with our public prayers of reparation. We want God's blessings on America, not Satan's curses. Lucifer is the eternal loser. Let's keep him out, he told KSRM. And I have to see who that was exactly. It was one of the members there, I believe, in Alaska. We just keep moving on in this flood. Lou?
How termite-infested are the inner supports of America's political and moral house? From World.Daily, Infanticide.gov makes animal cruelty a felony. This was from April the 9th, 2019. Virginia Democratic Governor Ralph Northam famously has indicated he's willing to allow a newborn child to die. But he's concerned about cruelty to animals. Northam has signed legislation...
Oh, where are your violins, Lou?
Oh, let me get those playing, yes. Reminds me so much of Hermann Göring in Nazi Germany, who was a World War I ace pilot and hero, but who later descended into drug abuse, became a drug addict. But he was at one point just enraged because he heard about someone mistreating an animal. But on the other hand, he could consign human beings to, you know, the gas chambers without the slightest worry, the slightest feeling of guilt.
Everything is topsy-turvy, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
Going on, Northam has signed legislation making animal cruelty a Class 6 felony, punishable by a fine of up to $2,500 and a prison sentence of up to 5 years. In November, however, he supported a bill that would have allowed abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy and even permitted allowing newborns who survived an abortion to die. He explained in a radio interview how a quote-unquote failed abortion might work. And this is his words. If a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother, unquote. Powerline's Paul Merengoff noted Senate Democrats refused to repudiate Northam's position, blocking a resolution condemning the practice. Merengoff wrote, quote, if we're really at the point where our country can agree that killing babies who have been born is always wrong, then it's not easy to see how we remain one society, no matter how strongly we agree that cruelty to animals is wrong.
Yes,
unquote.
We're back again to that Prophecy Club speaker's vision of this beautiful mansion of America, but it was rotting and it was going to fall. We're back to that vision that Michael Boldea, the grandson of Dimitri Dudeman, who came to America after the angel Gabriel stopped what would have been killing him. He was being electrocuted in an electric chair after delivering Bibles for years to Russia. And we do believe this probably was an authentic vision, because wouldn't God Almighty protect someone who had been delivering his Bibles? I think so. And we have to be very careful. Not every vision is of God. Satan puts counterfeit visions out. We remember a book that was written by a woman who claimed to have visited hell, and I was getting interested in these books she had written. And when I read that Jesus took her down to visit hell and left her there, and she had to suffer in fear and agony for a while before he came and got her, I knew this book is false. Jesus would never do this. This is not right. This is some kind of heresy. So getting back to Dimitri Dudeman, the angel Gabriel told him, you're going to go to America to warn America that unless America repents, nuclear war is coming. And he was able to see on a map all the points of light lighting up there as nuclear war came. And the idea that he was given was that the trouble would start when there was a civil war in America, and all these countries, including Cuba, Nicaragua, other countries, would attack. So we don't know what's going to come, but we do know God gives warnings to repent. It's so important that we do repent. So then, you see, after Dimitri Dudeman's time, he passed away, his grandson Michael Boldea has a ministry, and in his time, he had a vision of the eagle being shot down, and that is America. We had a young hairdresser some years back after 9/11. She told us she has visions sometimes, and she had a vision of the two things, the eagle being shot down and the tsunami that would come along the East Coast, and she heard the words, go north, go north. And I believe that they've documented 13 people have seen this as a vision, that a tsunami is coming. We don't know whether that's true or not, but we know that if we're holding the hand of Jesus Christ and we've repented of our sins daily and we have asked him to be a person of love through us. I'm not saying that very well, but Christ, you see, can reach out through us to other people. His love will embrace other people. We can help other people if we ask him daily what he wants us to do. And we do hope you will tell others about this program. We're showing a little growth coming to our new website. We had a letter from someone today who said the new website is so neat. He likes it. It's DividedKingdomRadio.com. DividedKingdomRadio.com. We do hope you will tell others about our program. But now we must get back to this article, Lou.
Yes, the closing words say, amid strong criticism, Northam, that is the Virginia governor, Ralph Northam, said he didn't regret his, quote, infanticide, unquote, remarks, accusing the media of misconstruing his remarks. How that could be true. This is Lou speaking now. I have no idea how you can misconstrue when you give the exact words of somebody. But, of course, that's his running away from his own words.
Yes, that's we're glad that it was documented. We saw it on television, didn't we?
Oh, yes, we saw it.
We heard his words.
Yeah.
So that completes what you have there, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
And now we must move on again to Friday Church News Notes. And for June the 14th, 2019, they had the headline, Trump, the first Republican president to promote LGBT Pride Month. The following is excerpted from Trump Becomes First, Christian Headlines, June 5, 2019. President Trump ruffled feathers on both sides of the political aisle when he tweeted his support for LGBT Pride Month. On Friday afternoon, the president tweeted, quote, as we celebrate LGBT Pride Month and recognize the outstanding contributions LGBT people have made to our great nation, let us also stand in solidarity with the many LGBT people who live in dozens of countries worldwide that punish, imprison, or even execute individuals on the basis of their sexual orientation. My administration has launched a global campaign to decriminalize homosexuality and invite all nations to join us in this effort. We here at the Divided Kingdom have to comment our approval on part of what President Trump said, that unlike in radical Islam countries, these people should be safe from violence. In Islam, LGBT people sometimes are executed because simply of their sexual orientation. But, you see, as this deluge against biblical truth continues, we must get the words here of American Family Association President Tim Wildham. He said, homosexuality is not something the president should celebrate. It's unnatural, unhealthy, and immoral behavior. We hope he will continue to stand firm against the so-called Equality Act, H.R. 5, and any legislation that threatens religious freedom. Such legislation will use the full force of the federal government to punish Americans who don't embrace the LGBT political agenda. And we would have to add here that we have two sides of the same person. We have that wonderful, wonderful president standing there in front of the Lincoln Memorial, honoring the historical sacrifices of our military through those various wars, fighting the Barbary Pirates, fighting in the Civil War. All of those things, you see, are wonderful, wonderful tributes to the good. But if we were to bring Lincoln back, Lincoln would not be standing there celebrating LGBT. No, he was in an instance that you shared with me, because you're reading a book, I believe, The Life of Lincoln, Sandberg's?
Yes, yeah.
And you might tell about when he was a young man what happened with the man who had, I think, harmed his wife. Why don't you tell the listeners about that?
Yeah, Lincoln and one of his good friends found out that this man had been beating his wife repeatedly. So Lincoln and the friend got the man, brought him in, and gave the wife a switch and said, okay, light into him now. And then they warned the man, if we hear you're doing this again to her, we'll do this a lot more to you, or words to that effect.
Yes, now.
And the man never did it again.
You've never heard that story, probably, listeners. So much about Lincoln is distorted and changed also. But you see there, there was a case of two men taking righteous action against evil. And Lincoln made statements, too, about how we would be nowhere without Almighty God. You had a statement there, I believe, that he made on his way to saying goodbye to these people.
Yes, in Springfield, Illinois. He had made that his home for, I guess, a couple of decades. And, of course, he was married and had children. And when it came time, after he was elected to the presidency, when it came time finally to leave to head to Washington on the train, Lincoln gave a little impromptu speech to all the friends that were gathered around. There were a lot of them, maybe a couple thousand. And it said that he knew most of them on a first-name basis. And he said how much he owed to them. It was a very pretty speech, and one of the things, now I've lost my train of thought, Elizabeth.
Yes, he said something about, you were all my friends when all my children were born, and I believe that he mentioned one who had died. It probably wasn't Tad, the one who died later, I think, while he was president. But he said another thing, that there was a very heavy thing on him, and that he would never succeed without that God who guides us and holds us in his hand. Something like that, didn't he?
The very God who had guided Washington.
Yes, yes. And, you know, we've heard stories that perhaps Abraham Lincoln had seances. He may have not been completely into Orthodox Christianity all of his life. We're not sure. But we do know that God brings figures to history, like Cyrus in the Bible, like Lincoln. We saw a movie one time that claimed an angel came, I believe, and helped Lincoln's mother with birth so that he didn't die. Do you recall there was something like that?
I do.
There's something very interesting there. So you see, he was put in history at a moment when God would use him, whether or not he was flawed. And he certainly must have had some traditional Christian belief, or he wouldn't have said that. And God protected his life. Didn't they try to assassinate him on the train going to Washington?
Yeah, Southern sympathizers were lying in wait, and they had to, I think, send the train early from New York City down toward Baltimore. And in fact, they had to sneak it through the city of Baltimore, if I'm not mistaken.
And so you see, when we're talking here about President Trump, it's not just that as Christian people, we know that it's not right, according to the Bible that talks about Sodom and Gomorrah and the destruction, it's not right to celebrate LGBT festivities and so forth. But it is right of President Trump to say that his administration will protect their lives. Certainly, that's a very good thing. But, you know, if he wants to be reelected, I don't think all the evangelicals really, this leaves a bad taste in their mouth to have the word celebrate. I don't think that Trump will want to pursue this route too far if he really does want to be reelected, don't you think?
I think that's true, yes. It's one thing to say, you know, we must protect these people just as we protect anyone else in this country.
That's
another
good thing
to say we are celebrating.
Because we can't be celebrating things that lead to having little Desmond in the bars with the gay men and with them throwing the coins. We can see what's right there plainly in front of our eyes, that this is evil. And Lou and I do not harbor any kind of hatred toward homosexual people. We don't. I feel that as adults, we are all given free will. If adults want to do certain things with other adults, that's up to them. And I don't have any kind of hatred toward them. But when they go after the children and the gay agenda, as Dr. Larry Spargimina talked about in his book, Living in Sodom, it's the agenda, the ferocious assault. It's not a neutral thing that these people aren't just going off by themselves doing what they want. No, they're coming after our children. And they said they would. So you see, we can't be deceived, can we? So I think now let's move right on to the next thing.
Let's see. We have something about China and Venezuela here.
Yes. Now, you see, We're getting into the idea that if we don't stand up for our rights, like Tim Wildham, I think they had a mistake on his name. I'm not sure that's quite right. At any rate, he said we did not want this Equality Act because if we get some kind of an act that's going to allow the government to go after Christians, we're going to be back like those FISA abuses, that they're going to be centered toward Christians. And so let's find out what's happening in China. And we recall, too, that it's coming closer to where we will be labeled like the people in China according to our religious and political views. We know Maryland is right out in the forefront of the real ID. It's coming. And if we want to have driver's licenses, we'll have to choose to go under it, but we're not happy about it. Let's find out about the social credit score, and let's think about how that can be used if persecution comes here against Christians.
Yes, the following is excerpted from China Social Credit System from Breitbart News, May 14, 2019. China's state-run newspaper, Global Times, revealed in a column defending the nation's authoritarian social credit system Monday that the communist regime had blacklisted 13.49 million Chinese citizens for being, quote, untrustworthy, unquote. The article did not specify what these individuals did to find themselves on the list, though the regime has revealed the system assigns a numerical score to every Chinese citizen based on how much the Communist Party approves of his or her behavior. Anything from jaywalking and walking a dog without a leash to criticizing the government on the Internet to more serious, violent, and corrupt crimes can hurt a person's score. The consequences of a low credit score vary, but most commonly appear to be travel restrictions at the moment. China is set to complete the implementation of the system in the country in 2020. As the date approaches, the government's propaganda arms have escalated its promotion as necessary to live in a civilized society. Quote, as of March, 13.49 million individuals have been classified as untrustworthy and rejected access to 20.47 million plane tickets and 5.71 million high-speed train tickets for being dishonest, the Global Times reported, citing the government's National Development and Reform Commission, or NDRC. Among the new examples, the newspaper highlights as dishonest behavior, failing to pay municipal parking fees, eating on the train, that's in quotes, eating on the train, and changing jobs with, quote, malicious intent, unquote. In addition to limited access to travel, another punishment the Chinese government rolled out in March was the use of an embarrassing ringtone to alert individuals of a low credit person in their midst. The ringtone would tell those around a person with a low credit to be, quote, careful in their business dealings, unquote, with them. In the system, all public behavior, the Global Times explained Monday, will be divided into, quote, administrative affairs, commercial activities, social behavior, and the judicial system, unquote, once the system is complete. No action will be too small to impact the score. Using the nominally private corporation, ZTE, China sold a version of its credit system to socialist dictator Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. The system would reportedly work through the already established Fatherland Card, a ration card used to distribute food and medicine to Maduro's supporters. Anyone who indicated opposition to the regime put their food supply at risk. With ZTE technology, the Fatherland Card, and that's in quotes, Fatherland Card, can track the purchases and real-time locations of any Venezuelan. Also, as Americans turn away from God, the dangers of a coming persecution of Bible behavior grow more plausible. Dramatic drop in church membership in the U.S., and this is excerpted from poll, Church Membership Dropped, Brown's Newsletter, April 2019. Quote, church membership has plummeted in the last two decades by nearly 20%. Across the United States now, only 50% of U.S. adults belong to a church and or a religious institution. Further, demographically, the drop was recorded highest among Democrats and Hispanics. Throughout the 20th century, church and or religious membership hovered around 70%, with the last recording of such in 1999. Meanwhile, the number of persons with no religious affiliation jumped from 8% to 19%. The new Gallup findings underscore a generational dynamic. Among Americans 65 and older, church membership in 2016 to 2018 averaged 64%, compared to 41% among those aged 18 to 29. Unquote. If such an idea, persecution of Christians in America, seems like a fantasy to you, here are two recent eye-opening school stories. Violence and hatred toward Christians are moving from covert thoughts to overt action.
And before you move to that, that was interesting about the Chinese, that they had a ringtone that would embarrass people with the people around them, that would tell them they weren't such good people. Do you remember we had an article a week or two ago about the Democrats, that one of them wanted to have this in the churches where the people, certain conservatives, would be belittled to the point where they would feel too embarrassed, they'd want to leave the church.
Yes, those were
this is interesting, isn't it?
The people working for ICE, or the border
yes,
control.
Yes,
people.
It was the border patrol.
Yep.
Yes, exactly. So we see these are the tyranny moves. And, you know, we had a little humorous character, Fatherland Security, in the Bush years. And so it was rather heart-stopping for me to hear there that... in Venezuela, they're using the Fatherland card, aren't they?
Yes, that's exactly
right. It's all from Nazi times. Now, go on. Let's see the beginnings of this persecution in the schools.
All right. We have Bible verse ignites ferocious battle at high school. Again, this is from WorldNet Daily. The date was April the 29th, 2019. A dispute over donated T-shirts sporting a Bible verse that basketball players wore during warm-ups at a New Mexico high school has come to an end with the head coach resigning. That is according to a letter from Superintendent Lauren Cushman of Animas Public Schools to the Freedom from Religion Foundation, which raised the issue after a quote-unquote concerned community member complained. Torrance Downs reported the coach allowed his players to wear the donated shirts inscribed with "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me," which is taken from Philippians 4:13 in the New Testament. The coach, who was not identified, also was accused of holding Bible studies with the players. Stounds reported FFRE, that is the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which he described as a, quote, Wisconsin-based group of perpetually offended atheists, agnostics, and so-called free thinkers, unquote, boasted about the coach's resignation. FFRF co-president Annie Laurie Gale stated, "We're pleased that the Animas school system took us seriously in remedying a constitutional violation. Such behavior cannot be excused in public schools," unquote. Many of the students, as well as the coach, attended the same church where the coach was active in leadership. The church had arranged for the shirts, which were given to any players who wanted one. FFRF wrote to the school, quote, "It does not matter whether some players ask the coach to lead a Bible study or whether wearing the religious T-shirts is optional. Courts have summarily rejected arguments that voluntariness excuses a constitutional violation," unquote. The principal, Cushman, told FFRF that when he saw the players wearing the T-shirts during pregame warm-ups, "I immediately questioned the coach and activity director. I gave specific directions at that time that this was not permissible and was not to happen again," unquote. Cushman confirmed that the coach had resigned. Stounds wrote, "It's a mighty sad day in America when a high school basketball coach is deemed unfit because he is a follower of Jesus."
Yes, and we see now, we recall in the past when there was a raid on the Indianapolis Baptist Temple where Dr. Greg Dixon was with his parishioners, because he chose to try to go out of the 501c3 churches and paying the income tax. And now, this is another shocking article, WorldNet Daily, state moves to take over Christian school. This is June the 9th, 2019. California has a reputation for implementing the leftist, pro-homosexual, and pro-abortion agenda in its schools. Even back when the Terminator actor Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor, the state required that schools teach only a, quote, positive view of homosexuality, preventing teachers from informing students of the health risks. And they go on to say in this article, this is why many parents have chosen Christian schools for their children. But now the state is targeting that last remaining stronghold for faith and freedom. And the Pacific Justice Institute is fighting back in a lawsuit brought by Riverview Christian Academy in rural Northern California. The school was hit with a SWAT-style raid prompted by an internet rumor put forward by an online left-wing tabloid. There was no truth to the allegations that the school housed illegal drugs, stockpiled weapons, and was preparing for an end times apocalypse. The state was duped into ordering a raid that included 16 armed law enforcement from the California Highway Patrol, 2 canine units, and 17 social workers, PJI said. The unannounced assault against the boarding school terrified students and staff, said PJI, but it turned up no evidence. It was, however, only the first wave in the state's attack. Instead of apologizing for its dangerous blunder, the state doubled down and began imposing daily fines against the school for allegedly operating as an unlicensed community care facility, PJI said. RVCA has actually operated as a private school for the past 25 years, filing an annual affidavit with the California Department of Education, as do other private schools and homeschools in the state, the legal team explained. The state is now taking the position that due to recent legislation, it is no longer possible for a private boarding school to operate without extensive licensing and oversight by the Department of Social Services. But licensing is more than just an administrative headache. It would require the Christian school to relinquish its moral standards. For instance, the state requires that licensed facilities allow students to have the right to engage in spiritual and sexual exploration, which contradicts the goals of many parents who enroll their kids in RVCA, the lawyers explained. The facility is under the oversight of the Teen Rescue Ministry, which partners with parents who want to provide their teens with a change of scenery and alternative educational environment. The ministry was founded in 1989 and the school in 1993. Reading the state search warrant and legal filings in this case is chilling, warned PJI's lead lawyer in the case, Kevin Snyder. This armed incursion on a faith-based school shows that the state wants nothing less than to take jurisdictional control over Christian education in California. This is rooted in its disagreement with millennia-old religious values, he explained. The school sued, but a federal judge complained that it hadn't gone through the state process first. But then the state itself abandoned its administrative routine and sued the school. In 25 years of practice, I have never seen this level of aggressive, militant, and ideologically driven conduct by a state agency against a religious institution, Snyder said. For years, as the public schools have become increasingly hostile toward parents, the courts have insisted that the parents' option is to instead choose private education. Now that fundamental right is also under attack. If you value this program staying on air, please write to Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thank you for listening to The Divided Kingdom, and let us keep our country, our president, in prayer. Good night.